This is the smell of the leftover tuna fish sandwich you left in your lunchbox over the weekend in a Wimpy trash bag.
Wimpy, Wimpy, Wimpy!
Blech! And this is the smell of that same sandwich in a Hefty Ultra Strong trash bag.
Hefty, Hefty, Hefty!
Ah, smell the difference? Hefty Ultra Strong has Arm & Hammer with continuous odor control, so no matter what's inside your trash, you can stay one step ahead of stinky. And for bigger jobs, try the superior strength of Hefty Large Black Bags.
Donate and listen to the podcast at WRWL.org.
All right, we're back. And this, folks, is a bombshell here because this is what we have suspected all along, but now the proof is there. Therefore, though these products are not vaccines, well, we've known that for a long time, or according to Latipova, even medicines, the public naturally has presumed standard industry safeguards for such products to be in place, when this has not been the case. Do you hear, John? There is no safeguards for those bioweapon shots that people thought that they were getting vaccines. And they're still, every day, they're out there, and they're still being depopulated, and they're clueless. Now, for example, the distribution of these products is not going through the licensed pharmacy distributors, who are bound by a set of regulations called good distribution practices, the scientists have said. Hence, though hospitals do not know or can they verify the contents or manufacturing process of these products, they just essentially get the black box shipment, and then they're supposed to inject it into people as a doctor. Well, you understand how illegal this is? She told McCullough. Severe variability in serious adverse reactions among batches points to a grave violation of the law. See, this is what we've known. There's been like six different strengths of these vaccines. But let me go on. The consortium of companies utilized by the Department of Defense that manufacture such products includes hundreds of names such as National Resilience, Snapdragon, Pantheon, Becton, Dickinson, Corning, Grand River, and SIO2, Texas A&M University, and many other universities, Latipova said. It also includes Emergent Biosolutions, that was the Department of Defense's exclusive manufacturer of anthrax vaccine, which also faced enormous safety issues, though it was not forced on every person on the globe, but just our armed forces for a while, she said. In addition, the former executive identified Catalent as another manufacturer that's a supplier to Moderna, which was recently found to be in violation of good manufacturing practices requirements by the FDA. Latipova, who worked for 20 years co-founding and managing companies that served the fields of clinical trials, data collection, and analysis, told LifeSite in January that the GMP laws are designed to ensure safety and consistency of pharmaceutical products, which must be produced in large quantities to very exact standards of purity, stability, and consistency. Breaches of these practices have historically resulted in tragic cases of adulterated, tainted, or poisoned drug products, which resulted in loss of life and severe injuries, she wrote in an email correspondence at the time. According to an earlier presentation, she showed how GMP laws include expectations that every new batch of a product is almost the same as all previous lots, and that vaccines from different manufacturers for disease indication are the same or interchangeable products. Quoting the specific regulations, Latipova said, "The failure to comply with these practices shall render such drugs to be adulterated, and that it is pretty significant crime to sell adulterated products. Given the enormous variability from such batches of these experimental COVID injections, 70 to 80%, John, which was shown just was shown just to be one or two, reported serious adverse reactions as compared to the 4 to 5% that's been revealed. Thousands severe noncompliance with GMP standards is clearly indicated and must be investigated, Latapova concluded. The FDA conflict of interest designs and approves product inspections are nothing but theater. As the Department of Defense is the chief operating officer of the project, recent documents also show that the Food and Drug Administration is identified as the chief science officer for the enterprise. So FDA, in fact, is responsible for design, development, clinical trials, and approval of this product, Latapova reported, emphasizing the clear potential of conflict of interest. For example, while the FDA performed no inspections of these manufacturers, none, due to supposed COVID restrictions, their recent findings of Catalent being, as Latapova describes, completely non-GMP compliant, including a bunch of observations that are just awful and normally would result in a shutdown of a facility until they can be resolved. There was none, no enforcement from the FDA, and manufacturing continues as before. Emergent BioSolutions also has been identified as non-compliant, which means, according to the former executive, the entire chain of production is not compliant, such as inspections to be a theater. Essentially, she said, the inspector will write up observations, but nothing happens. There's no enforcement whatsoever. And the Department of Defense contractors were permitted simply to continue their production. Yet there has been just one exception to this that happened abroad, where upon inspection, Japanese regulators reportedly found metal and steel and stainless steel flakes contained in the injection substance and returned these contaminated lots back to Moderna, she reported. But this is the only example Latapova is aware of where a regulator did anything about these issues. I'm going to stop right there. It goes on. Well, no, let me go just a little further. Metallic structures discovered in Pfizer vaccine to be respond to electromagnetic fields. While American individuals may be liable to indictment for examining the substance of these vials, whether or how this regulation applies to those foreign nations is unclear. Thus, Dr. David Nixon, an Australian general practitioner from Brisbane, decided to take a closer look at the Pfizer product to see what he might discover about its contents. As reported by the Spectator, the physician put droplets of vaccine and the blood of vaccinated patients under a dark-filled microscope and filmed what was there. According to Rebecca Weiser of the outlet, the discovery is bizarre, to say the least. Inside a droplet of vaccine are strange mechanical structures. They seemed motionless at first, but when Nixon used time-lapse photography to condense 48 hours of footage into 2 minutes, it showed what appeared to be mechanical arms assembling and dissembling glowing rectangular structures like little circulatory and microchips, Weiser wrote. As if she might be familiar with the phenomenon, Latapova told LifeSite News in November 17th email corresponds that she knows Nixon and has spoken to him several times. His discovery of inexplicable structures on the Pfizer vax is not unique, she said, and he had been observed by others as well. It warrants investigation. I cannot say what these things are, just that we know size alone is problematic, since these are observed under standard optical microscopes, so they are very large structures. They form pretty quickly, and they also seem to respond to electromagnetic fields such as Wi-Fi router in the office, she wrote. This is not something declared on the product label, and so this needs to be explained by the manufacturer, who we know is not eager to explain anything about their product, and they're very, very eager to inject everyone without informed consent, she concluded. Okay. I'm going to stop there. The article is very lengthy, but John, this Dr. Nixon, we played a clip of him. He wanted to show this. They had a meeting of doctors there, a large group, and he wanted to show them what he had discovered under the microscope. And he was silenced. He was silenced right away and physically removed, because you don't cross the deep state. This is what basically he was told. So what do you think about all that?
I think it's 100% accurate. I mean, Pastor Ernie, the FDA, was the FDA or the CDC just came out today and said that they were misunderstood about ivermectin and hydroxychloroquine, and that they didn't prevent anyone from using it. It was a simple recommendation. I mean, doctors were losing their license for giving ivermectin to patients. And so they're caught out in the open now, Pastor Ernie, and this is an amazing thing to watch.
Well, you know, we just read a thing about the CBS, how they had finally admitted, you know, about the Hunter Biden laptop, and we know that they've been losing credibility at an amazing rate. I mean, who can possibly believe the fake news? And in my opinion, only very, very simple-minded people believe what they hear on NBC, ABC, CBS. Here's an article by Ethan Huff. And here, John, it says this. Africa is only 6% vaccinated, and right. COVID right. has disappeared. Scientists are baffled. Almost nobody in Africa is getting vaccinated for the Wuhan coronavirus, COVID-19. As a result, there's almost no COVID anywhere to be found on the continent. The latest reports from the mainstream media admit that the pandemic is basically non-existent in Africa, which is confusing to those who believe the narrative that jabs are helping to eradicate the disease. Folks, we've been trying to tell you over and over and over and over, these jabs are meant they're to depopulate. John, people that have had the jabs are four times more likely to get COVID again and again. A recent piece from the Associated Press explains that in Zimbabwe, nobody wears a mask, nobody is vaccinated, and life goes on as normal. People pack the local markets in close proximity to one another, and by golly, nobody's getting sick. And so here, COVID-19 is gone, stated a man named Nyasha Nadao, who joked with reporters about how he keeps a mask in his pants to protect his pocket. When did you last hear of anyone who has died of COVID-19? They do it here all the time, right? But very rarely is it the COVID. Usually it's the vax that they're dying from.
Yeah, well, you see, over in Africa, they use hydroxychloroquine for malaria and that. So it's quite common for them to use that. They get it over the counter there. So the when you're using hydroxychloroquine, that knocks out, that ends COVID.
It goes on. Listen to this. The only areas of the world seeing mass disease and death are those that are pushing the vaccines. No kidding. There you go. This is a very lengthy article. It goes into what we've been saying all the time there, folks. Again, it's the vaxxers that are killing the people, not the COVID.
Yeah, Pastor Ernie, I came across an article today that I just posted on my blog, and it says that this year, there are 350,000 excessive deaths in the United States so far. 350,000, and you can't hide, they can hide a lot of things statistically, but the bottom line is how many people are dying when you add up the total during the year, how many died? Well, this year, It's 350,000. What are they dying from, Pastor Ernie?
A lot of them are dying from the vax. A lot of them are dying from the drugs that it's out there.
Exactly.
That they,
and a lot of them are sudden death from the heart, you know, and all of that. So it's adding up to 300. So it'll probably be about 400,000 people are going to die this year more than last year, and more died last year than the year before. So we're seeing this increased, the death shot is working now, Pastor Ernie. And people, these deaths are increasing, which they planned. They planned on us.
Yeah, more and more of these young athletes and these young servicemen are dying. And CBS now has admitted that myocarditis is related to the jab. I don't want to call it a vaccine, but they've admitted that now. So everything we've been telling them, they're losing credibility, and little by little, it all comes out. Let me do this. Let's go back. I want to play, you know, we played that clip on, you know, with Christopher Wray. We're going to play that clip now on the whistleblower. And you'll know one of the reasons, folks, that if those two senators sounded like they were angry, they were very angry because Christopher Wray has been lying. Now, there's a vast number of FBI agents, any and all that's got honor and integrity, the ones that they're either trying to retire early or they're jumping ship. They want to get out of the agency because the agency has gone rogue. It's gone bad. But go ahead and play that clip with the whistleblower friend.
Steve Friend grew up in Savannah, Georgia. He followed his father's footsteps and attended the University of Notre Dame, where he graduated with a bachelor's in accounting. He worked in accounting for 2 years before deciding he wanted to be in law enforcement. He was a sworn police officer in Savannah and Pooler, Georgia for 4 years, and then he joined the FBI in 2014. He spent his first 7 years in the FBI investigating violent crime and major offenses occurring on Indian reservations in northeast Nebraska. This included the Omaha Nation, Winnebago Tribe of Nebraska, and the Santee Sioux Tribe. He was also a member of the FBI Omaha SWAT team for 5 years. He transferred to Daytona Beach in 2021 and began investigating child exploitation, human trafficking, and child sexual abuse. He was reassigned to the Joint Terrorism Task Force in October 21. This is where his story really begins. Welcome to the program, Steve Friend.
Thank you very much, Glenn. It's an honor.
So, Steve, tell me what happened after you were reassigned to the Joint Terrorism Task Force.
Well, when they brought me over, they had to put me on the cases that they had already in existence. And what I soon learned was that the vast majority of those cases were tied to the January 6th incident at the Capitol. Just in my habit as an investigator coming from violent crime and in an environment where there's lots of cases coming very rapidly, I just started to look through the cases and really wanted to take action on them. And what I came to learn, though, was that they'd done everything that they'd been expected to do and were waiting to hear back from Washington as to further action or you know, what the status of the case was going to be, which to me was a major departure from the FBI rules for investigative work.
So wait a minute. The work had already been done by Washington. Why were you assigned it then?
That was my question. You know, just being very, very familiar with the case management practices within the FBI, you know, having opened over 200 cases in my career, when you open a case, it's assigned to you, it's assigned to your office. So when we had these January 6th cases, it seemed to me that those cases should have been open from Washington, D.C. But if a decision was made to, you know, to send them out to the field, then the case was going to sit with the office that it was with. In my case, it was Daytona, which is in the Jacksonville field office. And we'd run that case the way we wanted to, the way we wanted to make our decisions for further proper investigative steps. However, it was clear that a lot of the pre-work had been done on those cases from Washington, and they were giving directives to our offices, even though we were the assigned case agents with our office of origin. Washington was really running the show. and which is a, you know, not a kosher move on our part in the FBI.
Why would they do that?
I asked, and I was told that that had been raised, you know, early on, and the response from headquarters had been that it was to get quote unquote buy-in from the field. There's a couple of things I can surmise from that. One is the FBI suits and headquarters just have a really negative opinion of its investigators, and they thought, you know, if your name's not on it, they're not going to do a good job, which to me just kind of rang hollow, pretty macabre view of your personnel. So then I just did a little bit of critical thinking on it. And, you know, first of all, the January 6th incident logically is one incident. It should be one case. But instead, the FBI is elected to open a separate case for every single subject. So right then and there, you have one case has been made into 800, 900, 1,000 cases. So now you've upped the total bottom line number of domestic terrorism investigations. And then by spreading those cases to the field, you're essentially backfilling a narrative that was pushed out in 2021, 2022 about this rise in violent domestic terrorism around the country, when in reality, all those cases are stemming from one incident on January 6, 2021, in one location.
Okay, so you were suspended because you wouldn't do it. You were suspended without pay. Your gun, your badge, everything was taken from you. And it's because you wouldn't, what they say is refusing a lawful arrest warrant, which demonstrated poor judgment and improperly accessing the FBI's employee handbook and refusing to attend the SAB. Tell me about this.
Yeah, so I my first opportunity really to take to engage in an arrest of a January 6th subject, I'd already decided that should that come to pass, that I was going to make my disclosure to my supervisor. So in the lead up to that, the week before, spoke to my immediate supervisor, raised my concerns about improper case management practices, and then also just my concerns about how we were going to be arresting these subjects, because in my experience and having arrested 150 plus violent criminals, you never had to use a tactical team, a SWAT team to bring them into custody, because I'd talked to those individuals and we'd done similar things with these January 6th subjects. So to me, it seemed like an unnecessary use of force. You know, and I have SWAT experience to back that up. So I brought all those concerns to them. They passed it up the chain of command, my supervisor to the second level, again had more sit down meetings with those guys. Voiced the same concerns. Even brought up FBI training about abuse of power that all agents have to go through in the academy, where you go to the Holocaust Memorial and the MLK Memorial, and you discuss, you know, how those civil rights abuses and atrocities
right.
can occur.
Right.
So raised all those concerns, and they said it was very clear to me that they were trying to divorce the two issues of me raising my concern, and then they said it's separate for me to refuse to participate. And I contradicted that. I said, you know, my job is to defend the Constitution. I took an oath to uphold and defend it. And I think that we are violating due process, and we're potentially violating some cruel and unusual punishment, but just how we're bringing these guys into custody, even, you know, interviewing people who we never actually intend to prosecute is an abuse. So I have to default to my oath of office, and I think I am doing my job. They didn't agree with me. They said that I had questionable judgment and was not executing a lawful warrant. That was one of the issues. When I got concerned about my future with the FBI, because they multiple times told me, you know, where do you see yourself with us in the future? In fact, my special agent in charge, Sherry Onks, told me I needed to do some soul searching and decide if I wanted to be an
wow.
FBI agent. So I got an attorney, and he asked me to get him the employee handbook and disciplinary procedures, because he just wanted to be equipped to mount
right.
defense for me.
So that was the improperly accessing the employee handbook, giving it to your attorney?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay.
My employee's request. I even, when I was eventually suspended, they, you know, said, "What did you take?" And I said, "Oh, that was the employee handbook." And they're like, they said, "We need that back." I said, I thought you guys could get the handbook, but
right.
I'm happy to send it back to you.
Okay, hang on just a second. When we come back, he's going to talk about the tools called Guardians and his concern on how those tools are being used right now to investigate U.S. citizens. Tools called Guardians. Oh, that sounds safe. More with Steve Friend next. We are talking to a very brave FBI agent. I wish there were more of them. Where are you, local FBI agents? Steve Friend is his name. He's an FBI whistleblower. He objected to being part of the January 6th raids for several reasons. First of all, before I get to some other things, can you tell me, you said earlier that you thought it was cruel and inhumane treatment, I think you said, the way some of these prisoners are being handled. Can you tell me anything you know about that?
Well, I can only speak to, you know, what I've read about how folks are being held in the D.C. jails who have actually been taken into custody. My genuine concern was the process being a punishment for people who actually we never intended or were going to not right. be able to charge. So, you know, just sitting down somebody in front of them, you know, stresses them out. A lot of these guys had to hire attorneys. The one individual I participated in with an interview, he had lost his job and was, you know, retaining an attorney. And it was for, you know, walking in the Capitol after having gained permission of the police. So what was the point of us
right.
going through that process?
You know, it's amazing to me. You said at one point you said that the process is the punishment. And when you think of that, that is terrifying because that means that even if they can't charge you or you're not really guilty of anything, they're going to make this so horrible on you that you just stay away from everything. You teach people a lesson. Stay away. Don't even get close to any of this.
That's exactly right. I mean, even you can go back to what happened to Michael Flynn. I mean, you know, he was forced to sell his house and essentially become bankrupt in order to mount a defense and ultimately pled guilty to avoid his son being roped into it. So that's the process is the punishment.
And the FBI designated the grassy area outside the U.S. Capitol as a restricted zone after January 6th. And did they apply that retroactively to be able to look and say, well, you were in that restricted zone on January 6th?
That's my understanding, that they wanted to really send a message and then gather more people up in this dragnet. So they decided that the lawn on the outside of the Capitol, outside of those four walls, was going to be deemed restricted because at some point there had been some barricades. But just anecdotally, I heard individuals who were there on the 5th, they said they saw barricades, but on the 6th, the morning of, they saw people removing them. So there's a little bit of suspect action being involved with that.
Tell me about Guardians, the tools that they use to investigate called Guardians.
So Guardian is a software system. I like to think of it as like the 911 system in the FBI. You call 911, just cat in the tree for your neighborhood. You can do that to the FBI, to the National Intake Center. Those folks there deal with probably 3,000 calls a day or electronic communications. They kind of pull through it and disseminate them to the field for a proper investigative action. So when it came to January 6th, there was a huge uptick in the amount of guardians that came in to the FBI, and it was from all over the country. It could be from a disgruntled neighbor who didn't like his buddy across the street having a MAGA flag. It could be a family member ratting on a family member. You know, my uncle was there. He told me he was there. So people that were trying to be helpful to the FBI in pursuing this investigation, a lot of them actually just went to the FBI website, looked at pictures, and then would call in a tip saying, you know, this unknown subject looks like somebody I went to high school with. And those tips would come in. They would be pushed out to, you know, wherever was deemed the appropriate geographical location. So for me, you know, I got one that was really the first interaction I had. It was an anonymous tip from Rhode Island that said this individual was involved in assaulting police officers at the January 6th riot. They had done a workup on this guy. His phone had the geofence on his phone, the GPS, did not ping at the Capitol. The facial recognition with his social media accounts did not come up with a positive match, but I was still asked to go and attempt to do an interview. So it's not illegal for me to knock on anybody's door and say, hey, I'm the FBI. Do you want to talk to me?
Right.
It's called a knock and talk. But you know, it was just kind of a concern, just Because even if he admitted to being at the Capitol, there was no complaint. It was going to be very difficult to even charge the case. So I still just good team player at that point. Said, all right, I'll go knock on his door. Went to the drove about an hour, hour and a half. Knocked on the door. Met a gentleman there. Said, I am with the FBI. We're looking at January 6th. Were you at the Capitol that day? And he looked at me and said, no, that was the day of my son's funeral. So I just, you know, well, I guess I made him relive that whole experience and gave him my business card and was on my merry way. So that was my first guardian that I had for any of the January 6th. Mm-hmm.
Are you seeing an escalation of political targeting at the FBI? How concerned about all the things that we're seeing with the FACE Act, now the FBI coming in the middle of the night and arresting 78-year-old people, the idea that if you disagree at the school board, you're somehow or another a terrorist?
Yeah, I think there's definitely a political element. I think there's two dueling things. There's politics and there's ambition. Sometimes there's one, sometimes it's the other, sometimes there's both, I think. And there are some true believers, definitely my special agent in charge, Sherry Onks, is of the political left, made no secret about that. She sent out emails about the Dobbs decision being the Supreme Court taking away women's rights, and she put a gay pride flag display up in her office in Jacksonville. But then you have my assistant special agent in charge, Colt Murkowski, who I believe is probably more ambitious, kind of saw this as being a huge case of the FBI, than bigger than 9/11. And you know, if you get your name on something with January 6th and you can claim you had supervising responsibilities in some way of the largest and most important case that the agency's ever worked, that's going to be a pretty good ticket for you to promote within the organization. And I think just recently, you know, with these FACE Acts, you know, I've had a little bit of experience with it just being on human trafficking investigations. I reached out to some of the crisis pregnancy centers after the Jackson Dobbs case. Just because I was worried that they might have some threats come in. And then I also figured that they might actually see some human trafficking victims that could be a good resource right. for me. Did that, got a little helmet sticker from the bosses, but then was also told that I really needed to prioritize looking into abortion clinics because they were really going to be the ones that were at risk.
Really?
And I responded, I think the only time that the team that wins does that is like when the Lakers win the title, they burn the city. But otherwise, I don't think that the pro-life side is going
right.
to burn down places that are going to be shut down. But
right.
That's just my critical thinking.
And last question, and I know I asked you this before, but why aren't we seeing more FBI agents coming out? We've always thought that these guys were the best of the best. You know, conservatives have always given them a pass, which I don't think we should have. Now they're showing themselves to be, I think, less than honorable if they're seeing things themselves and are not standing up against it.
I'm disheartened by this myself. I told you the other night, you know, I really thought that I was going to have the Captain America endgame moment where, you know, I fought a battle and even in my most dire situation, I would get that on your left moment. And you know, there would be my brother and sister in arms standing there, and they just aren't. I'm done talking about the good men and women at the FBI. Yeah, I know that's the politically correct thing that all of our leaders like to say to make sure the donations keep coming in, but I'm no longer doing that. I think that, you know, it's a really sweet gig to be an FBI agent. I lived it for 8 years. It's a great job. You're the most interesting person, maybe with the exception of radio show host, that you walk in any room. Everybody wants to ask you questions and the big case. You can really get by in a 20-year career being grossly overpaid and underworked. And folks just kind of play that same narrative where they say, oh, I'm just trying to pay the bills and put food on the table and I'm going to keep my head down. I only got a few years to retirement. But you know, I swore an oath and I you know, like I voiced to my bosses, I guess you guys found the one that actually took their oath seriously. I believed in it. And that's why I wanted to do the job. So this was a job. So I did the job and it never occurred to me that was not, that was an option to not do that. Unfortunately, I guess the other 14,000 agents who wear the gun and badge don't share my sentiments.
Well, we have all kinds of oversight. If the Republicans gain the House, it looks like they're going to at this point. And I know you're in touch with people on Capitol Hill, and I hope we see more of you, and I hope all of this comes to light and we do clean up this organization or shut it down. If it won't be cleaned up, then shut it down. Steve, thank you so much.
Thank you.
John, the last count, there was 20 whistleblowers that have come out, according to what I've been hearing from Congress. And so, that 20 is that's quite a bit. So what do you think is going to happen, from here out when they start having these hearings and these guys are coming forward and the Congress passes some kind of restrictions or whatever that they can't be fired? Do you think that'll happen? What do you think is going to happen?
Well, Pastor Ernie, I've been saying all along about the election, and this is too dangerous for the deep state to have Congress. If the Republicans are going to do it, Pastor Ernie, that's still a big if with these people. We know their track record. But if they're going to expose all of this and more, I'm still of the opinion that they're going to try and stop it, Pastor Ernie. A false flag, something. This is too dangerous for them to be exposed like this.
All right. Who do you think will be the Speaker of the House? According to Max Gates, it's not a sure thing. What do you think?
I haven't looked at it closely because it's still a month and half away. But what I've seen is they're settled on McCarthy there. And
all right.
I don't know, though. I don't know. But it's the same. Well, that's what I'm saying. We've heard it from them, and that they didn't stand with Trump, and they're never Trumpers in there, and they've been so compromised. They've sold out America, this Republican establishment. Why do we think now they're going to change? So that's why I'm jaded with this, Pastor Ernie, because of the track record of the Republicans.
All right, Special Agent McTernan, here is this is your assignment. Get me McCarthy's phone number. We're going to look what has happened. We are fed up. We're tired of being betrayed. We're tired. We're absolutely fed up with being betrayed. At least there's a handful of us out here, very small percentage-wise, but that small percentage-wise. In America, could be several million of us out here, even though we're only 1% of the population. But there's several million of us, John, who will actually do something. And so get me McCarthy's phone number. Let's call his office. We'll start with him. We'll start with him. And we'll let him know we are tired of being betrayed. They've got to hear from us every single day, 24 hours a day. No longer. We want you to go. We want you to go after the deep state. We want to see that dirty D.C. jail that's been holding the patriots, John, the Christian patriots who came there because they were angry that election was stolen. And it was stolen. And anyone and everyone that says it wasn't is a liar. There ever been a liar as Merrick, our so-called Department of Defense cop, and Chris Ray. And so we really have to do this. We have to get people calling in. So find me that number, then we'll pick the next one, the next committee member. We need, we really, now some of you folks out there listening might decide, well, you know what? We need to call the Deathocrats. I don't know if it'd do any good, but you sure have the right to let them know that we're tired of being betrayed. So let's do that. Let's get McCarthy's phone number, and we'll put it out all over the... We'll ask people, let's see if we can get at least 10,000 people to call him and let him know we are tired. We don't want it. We will not accept being betrayed anymore, okay? Maybe that word will get out And as far as the Senate goes, maybe we should do the same thing in the Senate, especially with McConnell.
Well, Pastor Ernie, I mean, a tremendous amount could be done if they were real, if they're real, which I hope they are. It's just their track record is so poor. It is so weak, and I don't know what can bring change about, but hopefully we'll make this effort and it might have an impact.
Well, the Bible says one can chase 1,000 and two 10,000. We have people like Matt Gaetz. We have people like Jim Jordan. We have people like Louie Gohmert. We have people like that little woman from that congresswoman just barely won her election. Was it Boebert? She's feisty
Colorado.
Little thing.
Colorado.
From Colorado. We've got Marjorie Greene woman. Okay.
From South Carolina.
Okay. So we do have a number of them in the Congress that have got some guts, and that's growing. The number is growing. And if they can see that we're behind them, we've got their back, and the people do, I think they'll fight. We need, again, to fill that very same dirty jail with the real crooks, the real criminals, and that's that so-called select committee in D.C. And doggone it, we're fed up with being betrayed by voting for people and then going to Washington, D.C. and just betraying us. We're so tired of it. And so let's do that. Let's start that campaign. Let's get it working. We'll get the phone numbers to start giving them out, and then we'll ask other people to do the very same things, whatever network, in their newsletters or whatever. In fact, I should send that out in our very next newsletter.
It'll, a good idea.
Yeah,
that's
and have them. And ask people to let us make something up. And why don't you work up one, word one, and I'll work upon one, and we'll get it mailed out to the people and have them make copies of it and pass it around. We've got to take our country back, John. You know, there's another clip I'm going to play tomorrow. And that clip talks about it's how Bill Gates and the World Health Organization with the World Economic Conference have decided that now the time is now to start the death panels, to start deciding about how much money we'll spend on people, and that it's that we should really just start killing people off like they want to do in Canada, like Trudeau wants to do in Canada. In fact, the scientists out the Polish government for attempt to legalize genocide. We'll talk about that some tomorrow here.
In Canada, Pastor Ernie, they're trying to pass a law where you can euthanize children without the parents having any say in it at all.
I know. And so we've got to fight back with everything we have. We really have to. This is our time. This is what we continue to tell the folks out there listening to us. Look, here's the way it is. God has raised you up for such a time as this. God has raised you up. You're alive and listening tonight, and God has placed you here for such a time as this. Right now, you've got two options. You can run to the battle. Do like God's Word, the Bible says, resist tyranny. You could be like Shifra and Pua, the two wet nurses out there who obeyed God and God blessed them. You could be like Shadrach, Meshach, and Abednego. You could be like Daniel, Jeremiah. Moses, all down the line, the folks, and have all of eternity to be glad that when the call went out, you answered the call, you ran to the battle. Or you could be like the vast majority of people who run away and just don't want to be bothered. And they will have all of eternity to regret that when the time come for them to stand their ground and fight the good fight, they failed. They failed, and they'll have all of eternity to regret that. You don't want to be one of those. So you've got to join with us. Look, the reason we're here on this is to further the cause of Christ. And one of his demands, he gave us three missions. One, of course, the Great Commission. We're going to get to that in a minute. Two, resistance to tyranny is obedience to God. Resistance to tyranny is always obedience to God. Failure to resist tyranny is always disobedience. And then three, we are to stand fast. We are to hold to the traditions of the prophets and not give up any ground. That's the three missions. And so, you know, again, God has raised us up for such a time as this. Right, John?
Amen, Pastor Ernie. And it's amazing how we can still function in the hour we live in. It's amazing. God's really blessed us.
Well, you know, that's what I talked about tonight at the beginning. I went through a whole litany of things that we had to be thankful for today. Being born in America, you know, I was born in a land, the home of the free because of the brave, the land of the free because of the brave. I was able to serve in the world's greatest, most powerful military that the world had ever seen. They were good. They were great because they were good. We're seeing, and you know, and here in this country was raised one nation under God. Right now, today, it's hard for a lot of people to realize, but the Church of Satan has become a part of the Democratic Communist Party. It is filled from the top down with Satanists. Pedophilia, child sacrifice, things that we're going to be bringing out, that's going to come out little by little. And you folks out there, you better understand, you're listening to me, there's not going to be any in-between. There's not going to be any in-between. You're either going to be on the Lord's side or you're going to wish you had. That's the way it is. And on some of you think, well, it may take courage, believe me. You want to end up, we know how it all ends. We know who's going to win the victory. We know who you're going to stand before. And so you need to be involved and be on the Lord's side. John, I'm going to... Yeah.
I just wanted to mention something real quick. I'm closely following what's going on in the Arizona election. And there's a number of counties now in Arizona are not going to certify the election. They say it's fraudulent. And apparently the attorney general there is getting involved in it. So it's, and the woman there, Carrie Lake, who's running for governor, she's very positive. It's she's going to win because they're going to overturn all the cheating. So that's got to be watched. If that happens, this could be like an political earthquake in the country.
I know, and that Gates, what they've done up on the internet. They put it up, Carrie Lake speaks out, right? But it's not Carrie Lake, it's the opposition. So if you go to hear what Carrie has to say, it's that Gates. And he's saying, don't believe what Carrie Lake's is saying. But you're right, the Attorney General's office demands answers from Maricopa County. Look, John, tell me how this could happen. When you have 17% of the Democrats, registered Democrats voted in that, 17%. How did they get 51% of the vote?
Because the Democrats are in controlling the voting machine.
The Secretary of State, Hobbs, should have been out of there, should have recused herself by law.
Right.
That's the law. And
Ernie is saying is the Secretary of State was the candidate for governor, and her office was controlling the elections while she was running for governor. So it's like that's conflict of interest.
Well, it is, but it's also, according to the election laws in Arizona, illegal. It's not legal, John. It's like the entire Democratic Party. It's like the FBI. I had read before you came on, how they bribed, how they lied to judges, how they violated all these different laws. And it's like, so what? You don't have a Justice Department to charge us with anything. We got to take our country back, John.
Yeah, and right. Why wouldn't she recuse herself? You know, why not? I mean, there must be a reason why she wanted to stay in that position. That
was let me tell you real fast. It was because George Soros didn't want her to. Now, we're up against it, so I've got to. I'm always encouraging people, take those gospel tracts. You don't have time to witness candidates to somebody. That tract will witness to you. I'm going to read one, John, right here. What if you died today, okay? You could be having a slight pain in your chest or head. Within a few hours, you could be dead of a heart attack or brain hemorrhage. You might think that could never happen to you. However, the Bible states, whereas you know not what shall be on the morrow, for what is your life? It's even a vapor that appeareth for even a little time and then vanishes away. James 4:14. Even if you're in excellent health, you could be killed in an auto accident today. Do you remember the shock you felt the last time you heard somebody you knew was killed in the accident? They certainly never thought this death would come so suddenly to them. Perhaps these will be the last words you will ever read. You cannot escape death, as it is appointed to men once to die, and after that, the judgment. Hebrews 9:27, in fact, that's what that is. Maybe you were thinking, if I would die today, I'm ready to go. After all, I've never done anything really bad. I don't believe that a merciful God would send me to hell. Well, the Bible says, for all have sinned and come short of the glory of God, Romans 3:23. For the wages of sin is death, Romans 6:23. But the fearful and the unbelieving and the abominable and murderers and whoremongers and sorcerers and idolaters and all liars shall have their part in the lake which burneth with fire and brimstone, which is the second death, Revelation 21:8, folks. What I just read you today literally describes the entire woke movement, the entire what is called progressive movement, the entire Democratic Party out there, these people out there listening. Folks, but, there's a mindset, John, that these people think, well, if you don't believe in God, if you don't acknowledge God, then God can't exist. Well, God might not exist in your mind, but you're a fool, because all you have to do is you look all around you, and that entire universe was created by an extreme intelligence, and that intelligence is called God, and he exists, and what he says he will do, and he's got a history of doing exactly what he says, exactly when he says, exactly where he says, exactly how he says, and that history goes over 6,000 years of recorded history, folks. Listen, you're going to die. That will happen. There's no chance that it won't. And when you do, you will be judged. There's no chance that won't happen. And if you die saved, born again, if you've called upon the name of the Lord, if you've prayed to the Father and asked for forgiveness of sins and called on the name of the Lord Jesus and become born again believer, a new creature, well, then all is good. If you have not been saved, if you die in your sin, there is a horrible, horrible, horrible existence for all of eternity. And that's what God has said, folks. So I encourage you to do it and do it tonight. Well, we're out of time for tonight. So until tomorrow, as we always say, you ready, Big John? Good night.
I'm ready.
God bless. And always, always, always keep fighting the fight.
The fight.
Thanks for listening to the Voice of the Christian Resistance. What's Right, What's Left, hosted by Pastor Ernie Sanders. To learn more about our ministry, please visit us online at www.wrwl.org. Please tune in next time for another edition of What's Right, What's Left.
The preceding program is sponsored by What's Right, What's Left Ministries and is responsible for its content.
If you are 65 or older, you know this. Watching your hard-earned dollars fly out the window on healthcare costs is frustrating. Well, here's something that can really help, and it's worth taking a minute to look into. MediShare 65 Plus. MediShare is a community of Christians who share each other's healthcare bills And it really is a community, too. People encourage and pray for each other. Well, MediShare 65 Plus is a low-cost option for those with Medicare Parts A and B, and it fills in the gaps where Medicare stops. It's a great way to fight inflation, too. You can lock in one low monthly price for up to 10 years. And it's easy. You can use any Medicare-approved doctor or get 24/7 telehealth access from the comfort of your home. Very worth looking into during Medicare open enrollment, which ends December 7th. If you join right now, your second month share will be free. So don't miss this chance. Call 833-SHARE-24. That's 833-SHARE-24. 833-SHARE-24.